Hey guys, and welcome back to Percussion Perspective. I'm Remy.
I am Kevin.
Kevin hates doing that. We just talked about it.
And again, it's me.
Oh man. This week we're talking about front ensemble tips and tricks and things that we've learned. I think we're just going to call this episode, you know, Let's Talk Front Ensemble or something. So yeah, but before we talk front ensemble, how's it going, man? Crazy busy right now.
Yep, it's good. We on my drive in today, this morning, I was like thinking about how long marching season is, and I came to figure out it's like 15 weeks. And so we're through the like the nine. We're kind of in that ninth week, which is like leading up to contest season, which I think is when the kids get when they kind of finally see the payoff. And even the directors can kind of see the payoff a little bit. So it's that busy part where we've been working extremely hard and also trying to, you know, build up the other parts of our band program. So it's just crazy busy. Are you coping?
Yeah, I'm coping. It's tonight's actually one of the nights that we don't have it, like a rare night where we don't have anything. So I'm able to be at home and hang out with the fam and everything. There's like a little kid knocking at the door right now. There she
nice.
Is. but yeah, that's, you can't overstate that, man. Like, especially for those kids, like the freshmen or kids that haven't been in competitive marching band before, it's a long time before you really get that payoff of a contest. And like once those, you know, it's kind of like you see it in their eyes, you see it in their faces and the way that they act after that first contest, they kind of get it like, oh, that's why we worked so hard, because contests are really cool. And it's really awesome to like get a high place or to make finals or whatever. So,
yeah. And just seeing other bands, because a lot of those freshmen, like they don't really get like, oh, every other high school is doing the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I remember that my freshman year going and seeing, and you know, we have roadies. I know a lot of people do like have eighth graders come and help, and it's kind of a recruiting tool, but I was a roadie when I was in eighth grade, but even then I didn't really understand it, you know? So anyways, yeah, let's talk about front ensemble.
Sweet. So what do you want to talk about front ensemble?
Oh, I think we should, you know, kind of focus this on like setup and ways to set up so that you can execute at a high level, things like that. Talk about electronics a little bit. You know, I don't want to speak for Kevin, but I think both of us are definitely more like battery oriented, more drumline oriented teachers, which doesn't mean that I don't know what sounds good or that I don't know what to do with a front ensemble. My daughter's yelling at my dog right now. But yeah, let's talk about, you know, like what's your setup? What are you running with your front ensemble as far as instruments? How are they set up physically? Things like that.
Yeah. So as
we're getting into contest season here.
Right. So for me, I have three marimbas and three vibes. And if you're looking at the field, I think everything I'm going to talk about is like going, like looking at the field.
Like the director's from the audience, point of view, yeah. Or the audience.
So from left to right, I actually have like my two vibes are on the left. And then as you go to the right, I've got two marimbas and then I've got like my synth one. And I have a vibe in the second row behind the two, and then another marimba behind. The reason they're behind is because they're not currently mic'd. I think that a lot of people think that like you need to mic everything. But I think it kind of comes down to clarity and cleanliness and stuff like that. So not to say that, I mean, obviously those instruments are probably still going to be heard. They're just not going to be heard, you know, nearly as much. So I don't have the back vibe and the back marimba mic'd. And in between those in the center, I've got a bell, a girl on bells behind that. And then I have two synths. So one synth is there on the right. And then behind that is my synth two. And we can maybe talk about like how everything is connected, like daisy chain wise, maybe when we start talking about electronics a little bit. And then I've got two rack setups with two kids on each one of those. And then right smack dab in the 50 on the middle is a bass and gong player, like same person doing that.
Yeah, we have a really similar setup. So how many rows do you have then?
So I have three. I have three.
Three, okay.
Like those microphoned, or sorry, those, yeah, microphoned,
mic'd. Yeah. I mean, I've never heard anyone use it that way.
Those
but
mic'd
that works,
instruments,
I guess.
And then the non-mic'd vibe and marimba and bells in the back, and then the racks are behind it. But I'm beginning to realize with using shotgun mics, it easily picks up things in that front ensemble. And so I might be trying to go to two rows and like bring those racks forward a little bit so that the mics don't pick them up quite as much.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been noticing that this year also. That's a similar setup to mine. I guess I'll say my setup real quick. So we have three marimbas, three vibes also. I just have the entire front row is just kind of like a slight arc.
And I have an arc too. Yeah.
Yeah, with like marimbas on your left, if you're looking at the field, on stage right, and then vibes on stage left. That's all in one row. And then the second row, you know, from left to right, we have two synths and then two rack players.
So two rows.
Over on the right side. Yeah. So we have kind of like two longer rows. And there's, you know, like there's several ways to set it up. It's kind of one of those things where there's several right answers, but there's definitely a wrong way to do it. You know, when you're organizing, a lot of it is just function of how you're going to mic those instruments, you know, like Kevin mentioned daisy chaining. And we can talk about that here in a little bit, but as far as that setup goes, you know, obviously the vibraphones are probably going to have, you know, if not basically the same parts, they're going to have parts that go together and they might just be playing in different, you know, octaves, or maybe they're playing, someone's playing a root and a third and someone's playing a fifth and a third, or, you know, they're playing the same harmonies and kind of at the same time. The marimbas are usually playing the same thing around the same time. So you want to group those together. I've seen a couple groups put like, maybe they have three or four marimbas in the center and then they put like a vibe on each side. Like they have vibes separated with the marimbas in the middle. And I've seen some pretty good groups do that and it's worked for them. I would never do that just because I feel like it'd be really hard to listen, but
right.
You know, it obviously works for some people.
Yeah.
But I think just, you know, grouping, and then also marching band's just so visual that you want it to visually look pleasing. You know, you want it to be roughly like even side to side, balanced side to side. There's a lot of cool things that you can do with front ensemble staging though. And then are you guys like, I mean, obviously there's boundaries, but you guys are just pretty much backed up to the front sideline.
Yeah, like I've got a boom mic stage or whatever it's called, shotgun mic, like right on the 50.
Yeah.
So we kind of are right up against that, which is why I'm having problems. Like that mic is picking up a lot of bass and gong stuff. So I need to kind of figure out how to make that a little bit better so it's not picking up so much of that. But yeah, do you
there
have
might
a
be
bass
a, like
and
a
gong?
Low pass filter or something? Yeah, we do, and it's the same thing. It's just splitting the 50, and there's a shotgun mic right there, and you get a lot of tam tam reverb from it.
Right.
There may be some sort of filter that we can do. I'll have to talk to our audio consultant.
Wait, you're not a professional marching band audio engineer?
I'm not. I know how to turn on our console. I know that it's called a console professionally and not a mixer.
I call it a mixer. I call it.
Yeah,
the,
I mean it. It's the same thing.
The sound.
We
box.
Call it
the sound.
Yeah,
card.
Soundboard, console, mixer. It's all the same thing.
Yeah, but you were.
I have some really good friends that are like professional audio engineers, and they have enlightened me to, you know, that's not a mixer. It's a console. So I always say that anyway. Yeah, I'm better than everyone.
I'm with you on the and like front ensemble being really visually like there's something really cool about having like all your marimbas are like perfectly lined up and then your vibes are like perfectly lined up and there's like symmetry like your
aux, symmetry's big
your aux or your accessory carts are just like perfectly in line is really visually appealing and you can do that with like any size of front ensemble you have it's just like you can have I've seen a marching band that literally had like 10 marimbas and like 8 vibes and it looks really cool and you can do that with one or two it's just like attention to detail and making it all look really nice so yeah give a little bit of attention to your front ensemble when it comes to setup and just make it look nice and then it'll just be like a step forward for your show without even starting to play anything I think.
Yeah, it just, you know, it kind of makes it look more organized and like there was thought put into it. Kind of going off of that, when you come up with your setup, like every year I always make like a chart, you know, like I'll do it on, I found a couple websites. Microsoft Paint. I think there was one that we linked or that we talked about in an earlier episode and I can't remember what it was, but it was, you know, it's, basically, you can do it in pages or. Sorry, I had to burp like really badly, so I muted myself.
I was like, "What in the? What did you? What happened?"
Yeah.
You
just, anyway. Froze. But yeah, that you know, you can do it anyway. You can literally just use a pen and paper, but plot it out and then you know, with your students, figure out. Okay, so the center marimba, you're. The wheels of the low end of your marimba are going to go on the 50 yard line or, you know, and at a slight angle or whatever. And just, you know, that way you're setting up the same exact way every single time.
Yeah.
For that consistency. And I think maybe that can bring us into, let's talk about like how to set up a system to set up on contest days when you're timed, you know, like you have to push and you've got to get set up in 2 minutes and not get a timing penalty and all that stuff. So what are some strategies that you have used there?
Well, we practice it a lot. So
yeah,
I wouldn't say we practice it a lot, but I mean, like I don't think it takes that many times of repetition to do that. But I mean, your system is going to include every single kid having a job. So they have to like, depending, and the tricky part is depending upon what contest you're going to, you may be pushing on from side one, you may be pushing on from side two. So that system might flip. Like I think a lot of our contests, we go onto the field the opposite way that we go onto the field at our home football games. So like we have to kind of flip it a little bit, but the people on either end of your lines, as you're coming onto the field, need to know exactly where to stop. The first time that we did this, this past week, my synth player was like 5 yards off, which when your chords are set up in a way where like you have exactly amount of chords that you need to like reach something. So you're not dealing with excess chords, then like you're screwed because it's not matching up. So you've got to like, they need to know exactly where, what yard line their back or front wheels need to end up on. And then like, they need to know like their angles, like where, how their angles should match up and stuff like that. So it just takes a little bit of detail. So we practice it a decent amount of times. And then again, every kid has a job. So if your job is to do the mic, then you know exactly where it goes and getting it on and off the field as fast as you can. And I try to make them realize that like, this is a fast paced thing, but like if every single kid does their job exactly right, we shouldn't have to hurry that much. But like if one kid is being a dodo, and especially the kid on the end, that can ruin the whole thing. So I think just talking to every kid and being like, this is your job. This is your job. You're moving at this point. When we're done, do everything backwards, like to get out off the field and stuff like that. And just stay calm, but get it done quickly. And I'll go ahead and this is kind of electronic-y things, but if you like one of the fastest things that can help your front ensemble get set up is having a a UPS with your sound card. So an uninterruptible power supply or a backup battery, whatever you want to call it. This is the first year we finally got one. We spent like $175 on one from Amazon. You can go all the way up to the Furman ones that are like $1,500. Kind of just depends on how much power you're pushing through. But I mean, my console takes about 45 seconds to come on.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think most of them take, you know, anywhere from 30 seconds to a minute,
so,
which is a huge
right.
block of time if you're waiting on that.
Well, and those things, you know, those things were not designed. They didn't think about those as being like, all right, these need to come on real fast for a marching band. It's like, no, they don't care about that. So,
Yamaha executive impersonation.
So we got one of those and it's been great. I mean, it's just into the soundboard. I've got my power conditioner plugged into it and I can turn it on. I mean, I haven't literally done it in real life yet, but we've messed around
with
it.
So this is theoretical.
Yeah. But I mean, in theory, if it all works right, then I should be able to turn it on before we go onto the field. And that
will it power your speakers too, or just your sound cart? Just your console. I almost said mixer.
It runs.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it runs everything.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
well, so we've been looking into
like PowerCon. Are your speakers, they like,
so our speakers are active.
Dude, I couldn't even tell you. I don't know what our speakers are.
Yeah, like this, the part of this that is like the electrical engineering is like, okay,
but the thing about that is whether it does the speakers or not, it's when I plug everything in, by the time those speakers are going to be plugged in, I'm going to be plugged into the stadium power. And so at that point, it's going to be good. It's mostly important, like getting the thing turned on. And that saves me 45 seconds. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
I can have that on and I can run like a check on our wireless mics and get on a really clear channel. So I don't have to worry about that.
Nice. Yeah. We've been looking at that also. I think I've mentioned, today and then maybe in the last episode that we've hired like an audio consultant and an outside guy to come in. And when I inherited this program a few years ago, there were just a lot of really weird, walking into a program that had a sound system set up, and that's not my, you know, that's not my wheelhouse. I'm pretty good at running something if I have been there to set it up, but it's like I wasn't there for the setup, so it was just really difficult for me to find like reasons for why things were done certain ways. And so we've kind of just made the best of it the last 2 years. And this year it was like, all right, we're going to actually spend the money and have someone come in and help us, you know, troubleshoot and rebuild this system and get the sound out of the marimbas and the vibes that we actually want. So we've taken a lot of steps that way. And now we're kind of in the stage of like, okay, everything we have is pretty much performing at the top level. Like we're getting the best sound out of our microphones. We're getting the best sound out of our PA system. Our console has been, you know, like completely wiped and reset to factory settings to get rid of all the weird little glitches and things that were in there. And so now we're kind of in the stage of like, how can we improve it? And a battery bank is in there. You called it a UPS.
That's just, yeah, that's what I mean, it's, yeah. Okay. So basically it's like if it's supposed to be like power, like surge protector also.
Yeah, sure.
Type deal.
So yeah, I've seen several groups have those and I've always thought that they would just power up your console basically. And they wouldn't run your entire sound system like for a lot warm up or something. I was also told that generators are not great to use for audio equipment because your voltage can constantly change and you need constant, consistent voltage for audio equipment. So if we could find a battery bank that was strong enough to run things for like warm up too, that way our synths could actually play at warm up. That would be,
well,
that'd
and
be good.
Those
rather
banks
than use
also
that generator.
Though, yeah. The banks also, I mean, they're not really meant, like the battery that's in them, once you have everything plugged in, you've probably got like 20 minutes.
Right.
So
it's not like an entire rehearsal. Yeah,
you're not doing a rehearsal. You're doing like in a case where you got out on the field and somehow that field was not giving you any electricity, you would probably have enough to hopefully get through your show.
Yeah.
But like, it's going to die.
What I've always seen them for is use it to power up your console while you're waiting.
Right.
Like there's a band performing, you're about to push on. Let's go ahead and power up this console so that we're not waiting for it, like you said.
So yeah. So I'm
that's
hoping,
on our list to do.
Yeah. If that all, like I'm hoping if that works really well, that's just going to be like 85% less stressful of just waiting for that thing to turn on. So
yeah. And you know, if your system is like ours, you probably have power go to the sound cart and then power from the sound cart to all of the other, like to the synths and to a DTX or a sampler or anything like that. So it's like you're waiting for that to get line checks and sound checks and everything too,
yeah,
which is just really stressful. Well, I've got a recommendation that's kind of a, you know, like a hack or whatever. So last year we started using it's, let me actually pull it up real quick. But it's made by Diodario, which makes,
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. So I forget exactly what they're called.
Can I guess?
Yeah, sure.
DB25.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's what I was going to say, but I feel like there's a better name for it.
DB25 and a half.
Modular snake system.
Yeah.
That's what it's technically called.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's basically, three pieces. So you get what is called like a whip. And that whip has like, you know, it fans out to like 8 XLRs or whatever.
Yeah, it's got
and
eight.
Then it all comes down to one single attachment, and it's that DB25 connector. So you essentially have a mass of XLRs that have been daisy chained through, you know, through all of your marimbas or through all of your vibes, whether you're running from one end all the way to the other, or the way that our system is set up is the outside vibraphone cables in through the center vibraphone and then in through the first vibraphone. So they're all connected to the center of our setup. And then the marimbas all connect into that center setup. And then we have two DB25 connections that go
to
our
soundboard. So you've got two sets going into one. Yeah.
But it's like, you know, I remember when I, other schools I've taught at and teched at, where you're like, okay, here's all the marimba stuff. And you're like, 1, 2, 3, 4. You're just like plugging in like marimba one high, marimba one low, marimba two high.
Like,
and it takes forever.
Yeah. Which they're color coded. So it,
sure,
it's not hard, but it
just takes time.
Yeah. It's like, instead of plugging in eight things, you just go blip and you've got one connection.
And honestly, you know, it was something that, a drum corps person had told me about, and I saw something. I think I was watching finals or something last year, and I was like, what is that? Like I saw it hanging off of, I don't remember if it was like if I was actually watching it, you know, through like flow marching or whatever, or if it was just like a YouTube video that I had saw. But I was like, what is that connector? And I started looking, and I think I found it on Reddit, and then I confirmed it with someone else that I knew that had marched drum corps recently in a front ensemble. And they were like, oh yeah, it's that modular snake system. And so I looked into it, and I mean, I feel like we got all of that stuff for less than $400 or $500. You know, it was like,
yeah, I think
affordable.
Each of those pieces, like if you were to get like a set, like a female, male, and then the long cord,
yeah,
you're probably going to be like $250 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
For one
it was
set.
Really affordable. And like Kevin said, you basically have the whip is like that DB25 to that fans out to all the XLRs. So you have a male side, a female side, and then you know, basically what is an extension cord with that's double ended DB25 that just connects them. So everything stays plugged in all the time. The only thing that, and we actually leave that long modular snake, the center cord, we leave that plugged in too. We just coil it up and hang it on the side of the Vibe and the side of the marimba. Mm-hmm. And then when you push out, you just pull that one end to the sound card, and it's like completely changed our setup time.
And I got that from you. Like, you started doing that, and then I was complaining to you that like my snake was like losing, like every year, like another cord of my snake would go out. So I was like creating my own snakes, and you were like, "We'll just get this." And so that
you
was
were like losing channels. Yeah, like
if I had a snake of like, I think I had a 12 thing snake or whatever.
Yeah.
And like
12 thing.
People
are like screaming at us right now.
I know, we're not engineers, but yeah, when I did that, it's like, oh my gosh, this is like the easiest thing now. And so what we do, I mean, I've got the same thing. I only have one set though. So I just, from my left Vibe, it goes all the way down the line. So like my first Vibe has one cord. Mm-hmm. My second Vibe has one from that one. So two, then they're just daisy chained, right? All the way down. And then we actually use a stage box that is underneath the cart, or that's on the cart of the synth. And so everything goes into that, including the second synth that's behind the first one. He just walks up and plugs up to that. And then we use an Ethernet cable that goes from the stage
Ethercon
box.
Okay.
That goes from that straight to the Dante is what it's called, you know, going to the thing. So we
You're
just
more
have
hi-fi than me then.
Well, it took me a while I didn't know until I think you told me that I told you that we had a stage box, and you were like, well, yeah, that gives you extra inputs. Mm-hmm. Because we were looking at having to get a whole new setup, a whole new thing. So yeah,
because you have 16, right? You have the TF3.
No, we have the one.
Oh, the one. Is it 8 channel or is it 16?
It's 16 inputs.
Okay, but then you can
use
the stage
17 through 32. That So I patched all of the marimbas and stuff to the Dante, which is in the input channel, and so nice. It gave me all those extra channels. So yeah, we just have a power cord and the Ethernet cable that goes that connects us to that synth, and then everything just plugs in there.
Yeah. And we don't use any Dante or stage box or anything yet. We have the TF5, which has 32 channels on board.
Wow, rub it in.
I know the user interface on it is really stupid, but I like, as you spend more time with it, you just start to figure it out. Our audio consultant is not a marching band guy. Like he's really professional. He's built, you know, several outdoor amphitheater systems and everything, like been hired to just completely oversee that. So he's really great at getting good sound outdoors. But when he came in, he's like, oh, you have the TF5. He's like, you know, there's so many more that are just easier to use, and they're just quirky, but they do work really well for marching band. I don't think they were really necessarily designed for marching band. But it seems like that's kind of the standard choice is the TF series.
I think the TF series is for like someone like me for sure. Who like you there's like not very many buttons you kind of have to do. It's like, it's someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah. I don't know.
To me, at least.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I don't know what I'm doing, you know, and and that has not helped me with the TFI. But it's just like anything, you know, I spend a lot of time on Reddit and a lot of time on that Facebook group, Marching Arts Audio Discussion. If you're not a member of that, I really recommend going and searching that and, you know, doing the little questionnaire to make sure you're not a robot or whatever. But yeah, join that, because I've learned a ton of stuff on that, and I've learned a ton of stuff on Reddit.
Say that name again.
Marching Arts Audio Discussion.
Is this Facebook or what is it?
Yeah, it's a Facebook group.
Okay.
And there's, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, that's totally great. And then sometimes I see people set up and it's like, oh gosh, is that what I should be doing? Because that looks incredibly complicated. You know, that looks way too complicated. So
I love in groups like that when a random person posts a picture of something and they're like, can anybody tell me what this is? And it's like a XLR cable.
You're right. Yeah. How do like I plug in
those
into old, this?
In those percussion groups, sometimes it's like, they're holding up a VibraSlap and they're like, can anybody tell me what this is and how you play it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're those people, some like in this episode,
in this, yeah.
Like real front ensemble people.
What is Dante?
Well, who is Dante? yeah. So get a DB25, you know, modular snake system.
Yeah.
Female whip, male whip connector cable. It'll change your whole setup. And it's really pretty affordable. Now we do run in like a traditional snake also. It's like a 16 channel snake. And that goes back and connects all of our electronics. So like all of our, both of our synths, you know, left and right, our shotgun mics and our DTX and our sampler all go into that. So it's like we kind of funnel everything through the gap between the marimbas and vibes. You know, like
just like straight to the 50 or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah, both of the DB25s go right there, and then we take that snake, you know, from the soundboard out to the synths, and then everything is kind of cabled along and hidden with zip ties and stuff like that. And there's just enough slack to just make it to the snake. One tip that I don't want to say I came up with it on my own.
We'll see.
I'm sure someone else has done it. It was just an idea that I had. I use like stick bags on the outside of like my auxiliary carts to like, instead of like having just a random 10-foot XLR cable coming out of a, you know, a DI box from my DTX, I just like hang a stick bag on the aux cart, and then we just like coil up the power supply and coil up the XLR and just like toss it in there. And then it's like, so yeah, all you got to do
is a little
is
more.
Like,
yeah. It's like protected and hidden a little bit.
Yeah. And, it just looks a lot cleaner than like having it all over the place. And you don't have to figure out some way to coil it up and hang it or set it on top of something. You know, you just kind of stuff it in there when you're done. And then it's not very long, so it doesn't get like tangled up. You just pull it out of there and throw it in there. Where you guys run, what kind of shotgun mics do you guys have?
They're the Rode. Oh, couldn't tell you the
model number
of them, but I think they're like the, I don't know, like the $200 ones.
Are they the big fuzzy ones? Like,
the mic itself is just like whatever. But then, we have them in those big, like, grayish protective, like big cone looking hot dog things. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I'm going to get a quick trip real fast.
And then it's got like a fuzzy wind cover on it. Like they're pretty extra looking.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. We use, I was trying to look up the actual model number, but we use the Shure shotgun mics. And you know, I don't know, I'm really torn on shotgun mics. I wish that like winds would just play loud enough to hear, but it, honestly, like drum corps are using them now too. Well, and it's like, come on guys, you can play, you can play louder. I don't know if they're just going for clarity, or I understand sometimes people use them for like, you might have like a stage or something and it's just easier to use a shotgun mic to amplify that group rather than multiple microphones.
I think it's cool. I work pretty hard. Like trying to get the sound out of them without feeling like you're hearing them through the speakers.
Right.
Which is pretty hard. Like that creates a lot of scene changes when you're, mm-hmm. when you're going through that, which is maybe something we can talk about in a minute. But, I use three. How many do you guys have?
We have three.
I've got one on the 50 and then one on like, I think the 35s is, I mean, it kind of depends on where our drill is written, but we're kind of sticking around that area. And I mean, none of those are ever set at the same level ever at the same time. Cause it's like woodwinds over here need to be heard more, but over here there's like brass that's easily heard. So like they're going to be way different. They're never going to be at the same level.
Yeah. We have that same thing. Like we just put in a percussion feature this week and it kind of starts over on side one, over on stage right, and sort of like moves into the center. And honestly, I just like for those couple scenes, like the shotgun mics are just off. Like, I don't want to hear the drums through the speakers, you know? And then they come back on when the winds enter. But yeah, kind of like dynamically utilizing those shotgun mics. And
you can also, it's cool, like if you've got a woodwind feature, I mean, let's be honest, that's when I end up bumping it up the most. But like if the woodwinds are on side 130 and like, I was told by someone at one point, like if you want that attention to go over there, then you can pan that shotgun mic in your speakers, like over that way a little bit.
Oh yeah. So then you're kind of like
not a lot, but it can kind of bring, your ears go over there. And so your focus goes over there. So that's kind of another advantage to using them, I guess.
Yeah. That's a cool detail. To use sound like directionally.
Yeah.
To kind of watch yourself. Yeah. Our drill is more concentrated, at least like full ensemble moments seem, to be in the center. So we have, you know, we just number them 1, 2, 3 from left to right. So like our first one's on the side 140 and then on the 50 and then on the 40. So we might adjust that as we go on, but right now that's what we're using and it's working pretty well for us.
Yeah.
Last year I fought those things all year, to get a good sound, to get enough. It just seemed like we were amplifying ambient noise. You know, we're like amplifying wind and we're amplifying like the dude in the parking lot that drops his keys on the ground, but I'm like, I can't hear any horn line through these things.
Yeah. There's a challenge there of like gain versus volume level. And
right. Yeah.
It's hard. It's really hard.
And it's like, you know, you don't want it to sound like you're using shotgun mics. You want it to sound acoustic. So that's hard. And, you know, that's again, one of the reasons that we decided to hire someone to come in and help with that. So we've had a few like full coordination rehearsals where he's come up and just, you know, everything's been running and he's just sound checking everything and changing levels and changing settings. And we've gotten like a really, really good, solid, starting point.
Yeah.
Which we then just copy paste, and then adjust as we need for scenes. So
that's a good tip right there too. Like try your hardest to get all of your stuff kind of how you want it before you start creating scenes for your show. So then you're not having to like for me this year, I probably had 15 scenes already set up
mm-hmm.
and then I started to mess with my shotgun mics.
Yeah. Then you
and
just
it's
have
like,
to go
when
back
you,
and
when you
do
that,
all
you
again.
Have to like put, you have to do that setting for every like scene and it's like, dang it. But
yeah.
I learned my lesson.
Let's talk about building scenes. Let's talk about building scenes and stuff. We've mentioned it several times. I don't know if that's, I mean, I know it's not unique to like the Yamaha, to the TF, or there's like Yamaha has like higher levels. Like I think there's like a QL series and like a CL series, maybe. Anyway, that are a little bit more like pro audio versus like concert in the park or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that TF is like, but again, it's like run by children. So you don't want to like necessarily buy the nicest thing. So I assume they're called scenes on, you know, on all the other brand, on all the other manufacturers. But if you don't know, a scene is basically a way to, you create a scene and it creates a file for a certain section in your show. And, you know, say you, for the beginning of the show, maybe it just starts with front ensemble and the entire, you know, band on the field behind them is doing like a big giant visual choreo moment or something.
Way to give away the beginning of your show.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Actually, yes. I feel like 90% of shows start like that.
No. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, you know, you would build a scene and you wouldn't need those shotgun mics on because there's nothing going on the field. So like you would have your shotgun mics off. You would probably have your, you know, you'd set your balance and everything, and then you'd create a scene and you would save that. And then you'd create another scene the next time something changes in the music. So say the woodwinds come in on a feature, you might want to, when you change to that scene and measure 11 or whatever, the shotgun mics come on stage right, and the marimbas come down and the synths come down and the vibes go up to reinforce, or what, you know, it's basically, instead of doing this, like up, down, fade, crescendo, blah, 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 off, yeah, on, all that stuff. It's just a way to pre-program all that. And then you're essentially just tapping a space bar, like when you're giving a PowerPoint presentation, yeah, and all your, that's actually a good analogy. It's like, yeah, when you put animations in a slideshow, and then you're just like, you know, going through them. Now we still have, like, I've got a student that just runs the soundboard. That's all he does. He's not a band kid. He just like wanted to be in band. He was a friend of one of my percussionists, and I was like, yeah, sure, we'll try it out. And he's doing pretty well. So he runs the soundboard, when we do performances and through rehearsal and stuff. And yeah, he just goes through the scenes, and there's parts where like, hey, we need a crescendo here at the end of this hit. So he just like pushes the synths up, you know, for the two measures of the end of that section or things like that.
Yeah. Like at the end of a movement or the end of a really big scene, I do the same thing. I'll have a scene for it. And I always call it like end of hit, mm-hmm, or end of movement. And like, I always hit it on like beat two of the last measure. And all it does is it bumps that synth up, that bottom synth up, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 dB.
Yeah. Does it, like, it, do you fade it up, or no, does it, because just they, all of a sudden, they took, go up?
For some reason, one of the upgrades many years ago that TF had, or that Yamaha had on those, it took away the ability for it to move gradually.
Oh, weird.
Which I was like, oh my gosh.
That, so does yours like do that? Would be something. So I have on the TF5, there's like fade times in between scenes, but I haven't started messing with it yet.
Okay, well, I need to look at that, because that makes me mad, because I would love for it to just like
slowly do it.
Yeah, just go up, even if, because then you could set it for like two measures worth or whatever.
Right, yeah. So like mine, all of mine are, I think it defaults at 1 second. Okay. So we have to, you know, if we're at, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, change, you know, I'm going like,
yeah,
you know, on the, yeah, T ha- like of
it's
the three.
Yeah, it's like, it's a percussion part.
Yeah, it kind, yeah, of is. Yeah, yeah. You kind of have to get a feel for it and change a little bit early. So yeah, but I do know there are fade timers on the TF5. I just haven't messed with them yet.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, do scenes if you have the ability, like if your show is changing enough, it can really impact. And the cool thing is most of the time it keeps it really consistent. So you can actually tell, especially if you use shotgun mics, you can tell if your kids are playing super consistent or not. If they, mm-hmm, sound really wimpy, you're like, hey, you guys aren't playing as good as you were a minute ago, because I can tell, because the sound is not as impactful as it was. So it just keeps it really, really consistent. But yeah, scenes are really useful.
Yeah, it's also really useful when you're using like wireless mics for soloists. You know, you can like, obviously you want that wireless mic, it's going to be on that kid or on that instrument for the entire show, and it needs to be turned on for the entire show. They don't need to, like, cause you want to do a sound check at the beginning or a line, right, check at the beginning. And so they're going to have it on and leave it on with some fresh batteries in there at the beginning of every show.
No,
hopefully.
You can put one set in all year.
Yeah. And, we do fresh batteries every show. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. And, anyways, so yeah, you know, that pack stays on out there and that connection is always there. And then, you know, you go to a scene and then you've just programmed, okay, that wireless mic's going to be on right now. And then you don't have to hope that you're scanning and you pick up on the correct signal or the correct channel and everything. You just know it's there and it'll just come on by itself. So scenes are really helpful. We might be just saying this. Everyone listening is like, yeah, I know, I have 85.
Yeah, everyone's like, we know all this stuff.
So I think, I don't remember, we We have three parts in our show this year, but part three is like really could be two parts. It's pretty long. And we're about a third of the way through it. That's what we're going to perform at contest on Saturday. And we have currently maybe 25 scenes or something like that.
Yeah.
So I would say somewhere between 6 to 8 scenes per section of our show. Usually.
Yeah. I would say, I probably get to around 30 or 40, maybe by the end of the year. And it seems like a lot, but like you're building it slowly and it's really useful and really beneficial. And it seems like a lot, but it kind of flies by, especially if you've got like kind of a bunch happening pretty quick after each other.
The only thing that I really wish, and maybe there's a way to do this, but I haven't found it. I don't think there is. I wish that you could insert a scene in the middle of two scenes, you know, like, is there a way to do, like, if you're like, oh, there really needs to be like, they're always numbered like A6, right. A7.
Yeah, it's like, I always have to like, copy, paste, and move everything
down until there's an empty space.
What I do, I'll try. When I'm making scenes, I'll try to like leave a space.
Yeah, sometimes me too.
I'm doing it. And then you can go back and you can delete one. So like if you put one on A10 and then A12, you can go back and delete A11.
Do you use the user defined controls?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's a good hack too. If you have that, I hadn't thought about doing that. You could leave.
No. Well, I don't use it for that. There's just like a little button you click when you're on the scenes that comes up you can just delete it from there.
Oh, I'm not talking about that. The A, B, C, D, E, F, like those buttons up there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have those set up to go like back scene, forward scene. Right.
Yeah.
And if you leave gaps in between, it will skip the empty scene.
Oh,
right. So like if you have like A6 is a scene and then A7 is blank and then A8 is a scene. If you're on A6 and you hit forward scene, it'll just go to the next scene where
because
there's
nothing was
data.
Assigned to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good way to do that. Maybe I should just start leaving gaps in between all of them.
You just got to like, in the moment, you got to remember to think that you might change something.
Yeah.
But,
and then later on in the show, when everything is more permanent, then it's like, oh, we didn't need a scene there. I'm going to go ahead and delete that thing. But
building the scenes is like just a massive process. Like I can spend an entire rehearsal for weeks just up in the press box, like getting all that stuff set up.
Yeah. My last tip that goes along with this. If you know, every console has like an app where you can use an iPad. And I find like, I've done this before, but I bought a new iPad like this year with, just fine.
Were you sponsored by Apple or did you pay full price?
Paid full price, unfortunately. Nice. I did get a really good deal on
5-finger discount.
One, right. Yeah, I just took it. No, I got a really good deal on the one that I got.
Nice.
Found it on sale, like on Sam's Club online. Really random, but
ooh.
Used my mom's membership and bought it. Anyways, that's not an admission of guilt.
Continue.
Yeah,
on.
Man. Use your iPad and you know, like all you got to do is connect a router, to the back of your console. And, you can like mine, I can go all the way up to, as long as I don't go inside the press box, as long as I stay out on the balcony. I lose connection when I go inside. Then when I come back out onto the balcony,
right. It has to like kind of reconnect. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure you could probably get a better router too, like with a stronger signal or a wider signal, but
yeah, don't get it from Toys R Us.
Yeah. I think they're out of business.
Yeah. RIP.
Moment of silence. The iPad is a really big help though. So you can do that. And that's ways like once you have the scenes built, it's really easy to make tweaks to that, to those scenes from there. So that's my last tip. There's tons of stuff to talk about. We didn't talk about any sort of like educational stuff. This was all just sort of setup tips and gear tips from two percussion directors that are better at teaching drum lines.
better at teaching the kids than setting up a sound system.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's all really good. I use the iPad too. It's great. My biggest thing, if you leave this learning anything, is like get a system in check, like get everything figured out and really buy, get that DB25, the modular snake system, and honestly get some kind of backup battery that's going to save you time as you're setting up. But just get your front ensemble stuff organized. Don't just like throw the kids out on the field, and because it's not going to sound good and they're going to be unorganized and it's going to look really unorganized and not professional. But hopefully you learned something in the conversation today.
Yeah, you heard it here. I think this was our longest episode that we've done so far.
Yeah. Wow, we're really getting there. So we are looking at hopefully interviewing some people. Aren't we, Remy?
Yeah, I think after marching band's done, we'll start doing some interviews. My daughter is crying right now. I think she fell down or something. So.
Oh, no. We're going to try to get Elon Musk first, I think, right?
No.
Oh.
Some of our friends, colleagues and teachers. Yeah, some of our colleagues and teachers would be cool. Like muting or something. Can you hear me?
I got you. Yeah, you're
in. Okay. Yeah, looking forward to that and, you know, branching out and bringing some people on as guests to talk about specialized topics. So, yeah, hope you guys got something out of this and hope you enjoyed it. And we'll catch you next time.
See you later. Thank you.